Well, good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you, big book study. My name is Janice P.M. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday. It's August the 24th, 2023. This is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And we're going to share and discuss page 102, paragraph 1. Why sit with a long face? That's how it begins. And ending only one paragraph only. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Okay, and our readers today are, for the 12 steps, Laura W., and for the 12 traditions, Kathy B. And our readers today are Sherry Z., Vanita C., for the 124, and Jody E. Then we have newcomer greeter Kathleen W., who will be there also for sponsors, and announcements, Leslie W. Now, I have two reference numbers for you, and one of them is for Wednesday, which was yesterday. That's August. If you could just, press 1 to mute, so we'll have a nice quiet recording. Wednesday, August the 23rd, 2023, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 20,567. That's 20567. And this morning, that 7 a.m. meeting for Thursday, August the 24th, 2023, is 20,567. Okay. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Now, our sole purpose is, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You, Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. So I will now ask Laura W. to please read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning, Laura W. from Ohio, the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable, step one. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer, and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service, Laura W., recovered in Ohio.
Well, thank you so much, Laura. Now I will ask Kathy B. to please read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning. I'm Kathy B., a recovered compulsive overeater. These are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service. I pass.
And thank you, Kathy B., reading the traditions of OA. Now, this is how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Now, anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Now, our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. Pardon me. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. Watch me start coughing. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Now, today we're going to resume our study of the Big Book on page 102, paragraph 1. And I will now ask Sherry Z to please start reading for us.
Good morning, visionaries. Thank you. I'm Sherry Z, recovered in California. Thank you all for your service and for being here. Page 102, first full paragraph. Why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you are with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friends know they are not in charge, not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Again, Sherry Z in California, and I'm so honored to be reading this paragraph, thanks to God and to all of you. So just to orient, we're nearing the end of chapter 7, which is 15 long pages. The beginning of it is, how do we become of maximum service? Here's the instructions. First, find your fellow sufferer. 2, how can you actually help? 3, discover the rewards of helping. And now we get to those end notes, which are the dangers, or what I would call like the little footnotes of instructions about, okay, you're out in the world interacting with others, and here's some little warnings, little things that you should know right when you go out there. First one, don't pout. Second one, don't long for another period when you could eat the bag of bread, because I know I used to do that a lot, and I don't do that today, thank God, to food neutrality. Go with people. Don't stay home. I used to think, I can't go anywhere because I've got to eat my apple and my this and my that. This is the end notes. Don't ask other people to change on your account. Sometimes explain and don't withdraw. There's other instructions in this tiny little paragraph, and I love the paragraphs like these in the big book because they pack a big punch. It's like they're trying to cover all the bases. And each one of these, if I break it down, is telling me, live life. You got recovered by the grace of God so you could participate. And I never got that until now. Don't withdraw. Don't pout. Be a part of it. And I just want to share that I'm deeply in life today. We're leaving to go to New York, and I'm not afraid of the food, of what will happen, of moving my daughter into college. And I have a 10-step to help me deal with the fears about arguing with my husband. But that's it. I am totally immersed in life because my love affair with food is over by the grace of God today. So for the fellow sufferer, here's how you can find help. And as we near the end of working with others, I love these little end notes. So thank you all for letting me share.
And thank you all for your message. That was Sherry V. God, I don't know. Probably from Michigan. I don't know. But anyway.
Southern California.
Oh, dear. California. Thank you, Sherry. All right. Now I'm ready to take some names. And I'm going to ask you very kindly to go slow and so I can hear you, because it's usually not you, it's me. And if you've, you know, if you've shared within the last 3 days, please, in order that others might share their experience too. So, you know, just kindly ask you. All right, who are we going to take first?
Mo H.
Okay, Mo H, California. You can say where you're from if I don't
California.
Say it. Yeah, because I'll say it wrong. Next, after Mo H.
Bruce E.
Okay, Bruce, nice and clear. Bruce E. from? You can tell us when you share. See, I go from one thing to the other. All right, anybody else after Bruce?
Joan Marie M.
Joan Marie M. Thank you, Joan Marie. And whom else?
Sherry C. from Connecticut.
Who C?
Sherry.
I still didn't get it. Isn't that something?
Suri, S-U-R-I.
That's why. Sorry about that. I apologize, Suri. Okay, next. We'll take one more in this group. Who will that be? All right, we won't waste time. We'll go right to Mo H. Please, Mo, please go ahead.
All right, thank you very much, Janice, for your loving, kind service. My name is Mo H. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, sugar addict in California. Well, yes, I very agree with the first share, the opening share about, you know, now we are getting down to the nitty-gritty here of step 12. You know, there was a time in my life that I was very scared about going out and being around food. It was early on in the program. And I remember being invited to a bridal shower, and they were having a particular food at the bridal shower that I don't eat. And so I was talking to my sponsor about it, and I said, you know, what am I going to do? And I don't want to bring my food, and I don't want to look different, and, you know, the whole rigmarole that we do. And she said, when did this bridal shower become all about you and your food? And I mean, that just like hit me across the face. Like, everything I did was all about food, never about any other people. And I tell you, that statement that she gave to me changed my attitude in going to places. What is my motive in going to places, which we talked about yesterday? But, you know, I need to let them know that I can't eat that certain kind of food. Why? Because I'm allergic to it. I don't have to go into detail unless somebody asks me. And, you know, it says explain to your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. You know, why certain foods disagree with me. You know, if they really want to know what happens, you know, I gain weight. I get fat. That's what happens, you know. And when I start eating, I can't stop. So it's better for me to do what I need to do. So for that particular bridal shower, I was able to figure out how to make what they were making abstinently with the help of other people like you people on the phone. And it went very, very well, as I remember. I remember bringing my food and asking the people in the kitchen if, you know, I could warm it or they could warm it for me. And I sat down and I focused on the bride and on the relationship. So that's, you know, what I get from this paragraph is about, you know, being in relation to people when I am out and socializing. And I don't want to start isolating again. I had been isolating for a while here after my husband died, and I know what that's like, and I don't want to do that. So I am now getting out and socializing. You go to a Friday afternoon cocktail gathering, but I bring my water and nobody bothers with me. We just socialize. So with that, I pass. Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for your message of this paragraph, Mo H. Okay, Bruce E., it's your turn.
Well, thank you. This is Bruce E. I'm recovered. I'm in Fort Myers, Florida. And I'm grateful to be on the call today and grateful to everybody that's on this call. And I've done the thing about sitting with a long face in places where there is a lot of food around, everybody else gets to eat it but me. I've done that. That's kind of like self-pity, but that doesn't work. You know, that doesn't get me anywhere. So I don't do that anymore. And I've tried to remember, a guy did tell me this once, you know, I was at an airport. He said, hey, remember why you're at the airport. You're there to catch a plane. You know, remember why I'm at a place. What's my business of going there? Why am I there? You know, and then focus on that. You know, what's the reason that I'm there? Not for the food, right? I'm going there for the fellowship or for whatever it is, but it's not for the food. Let's see. They don't have to change on my account. They don't have to eat something different because of me. You know, I can let them know before I get there if it's a party or something, you know, what my food plan is. And if they want to make something for me, that's fine. Otherwise, I can just eat whatever I need to, whatever's on my food plan. Let's see. So if you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. And I was at a event a long time ago. I can't remember if it was somebody. It was at somebody's house, and they were serving dinner. And this is a long time ago. And she said, the lady of the house said, I made this something specially for you, and it was not an abstinent food. And I told her, well, sorry, can't eat it. You know, that's all I say is sorry. No, can't eat it. And that usually goes, you know, people pretty well accept that. You know, I haven't had that many problems with that. And so I don't have to be upset because I can't eat all that stuff. I even see my wife sometimes at these church functions. My wife's skinny as they come and doesn't have a problem with food. I see her, I've seen her a few times take seconds on the desserts. And, you know, I just kind of surprised about that. But I see a lot of other people take seconds on the desserts or take a big one and then another big one. But it's not that big a deal to me. You know, it really isn't anymore. I just look, I look at what it is because you can't help but look once. But then I look away. So first look is on me. First look is on God. Second look is on me, right? So I don't look the second time. I look, you know, I see it, then I look away, and I don't make a big deal about it. It's a lot easier than it used to be. I don't stay away because there's food or there's going to be alcoholic foods there. I don't stay away for that. I just don't go. I just don't eat it, and I just don't do that, you know. Or I eat my abstinent food, and that's it. You know, that's all. It works out. It does work good. This abstinence works. This program works. Being recovered really works. Food isn't as big a deal as it used to be. It's still a big deal, but not like it used to be.
Gentle reminder.
So thank you, and I pass.
And thank you so much for your experiences, Bruce D. from Florida. Okay, now we have Joan Marie M. Please, Joan, it's your turn. So, Joan Marie.
Good morning, everyone. Wonderful shares already. And the thing that stood out to me was not going someplace just because they're eating differently than I do or the foods are there that I don't indulge in at all. And so, you know, like even today, I'll be out with my friends. It's a Thursday thing. We go to prayer, and then we go after to fellowship. And they certainly don't eat anything that don't eat like I do. And they already know because they're friends for a long time. But, you know, and then when I went to a function at church just Monday night, it was somebody's birthday, and, of course, they made this different thing, and it was from scratch, and they were bragging on it and all that kind of stuff. And I just said, when my time, they passed it out, I said, no, thank you. And that was that about it, you know, because before I can remember, many years ago, I'd be on vacation. I'd be stressing before I went, trying to find a place that I thought I could eat. It was torment. It really was. And then, you know, withdrawing, not going somewhere just because it would be an occasion where they'd be serving this kind of food that I don't eat. I mean, that's bondage. Today, I truly, truly have neutrality around food. I don't think about it. I don't desire it. It's a miracle that God gave me, a gift, and I treasure it, and I do everything I can to keep it, everything I did to get it, surrender to God those foods, call my sponsor, text my food in, weigh and measure. You know, making the 3 outreach calls, all of those things that got me there in the first place, I continue to do because I want that beautiful miracle gift of bondage from food. Lift it every single day, no matter where I'm at. I thank you, I thank you so much for all your shares, and I will pass at that and listen some more. Thank you.
And thank you, Joan Marie, Joan M. Joan Marie M. Where are you from, Joan Marie?
Sorry, I'm from Nevada.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your share. Thank you for your experiences. And now we have Suri C. from Connecticut, I believe. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning, folks. This is Connecticut Compulsive Overeater. I listened to 7 a.m. and I'm listening to the recording and I'm listening to this group now and hearing this paragraph today twice. I was struck by the opening words of a Vision for You meeting. We welcome all those who wish to stop eating compulsively or engaging in compulsive food behaviors. I always wondered what it was about me that, like, everybody says, oh, I got so many calls from Vision, I got so many outreach calls, and I'm like, I don't know, I say the way that I present in such a way that, like, I'll say I'm not recovered, and I'm not getting an outreach call. And I realize it's because it's like I'm at a party, and I am at a Vision for You party, and I'm standing on the sidelines, and people are saying, welcome, welcome, you know, come dance with us. We're having such a good time here in our recovered state. And they'll even pull me into the circle, but I'm not ready to join. I'm needing more strength, more support. I'm terrified of recovery. I used to be the one in the middle of the circle in the dance floor. But when it comes to food and when it comes to being recovered and putting the food down, I am so fearful. I am I'm on the sidelines, and my feet are like lead, and putting the food down is terrifying. But I keep coming into the room. And I'm just giving a voice to those people who are in the room who are not ready to share, who are just listening, because I can tell you, I am sure that in my non-recovered state, I am not done listening to a Vision meeting to fall asleep at night or to a recording. I'm not done listening to a Vision meeting in the morning with my hands tucked underneath me while I lay flat in my bed because I'm terrified of overeating ridiculous, overeating like nothing, just finding something that doesn't even taste good just to overeat it. And I'm grateful that I get to share on this line and that there are people that are out there that are recovered, that are making those outreach calls, and I hope that when the day and time will come soon that I can be that person making those outreach calls, and that God will lift the fear from me, and I pray for that day to come soon. And with that, I pass.
Oh, thank you so much, Suri C. from Connecticut, for your honest share. Okay, we're going to be taking some more names. Now, who would like to follow Suri?
Kathleen W. from Illinois.
All right, let's
do Susan
Kathleen.
G. from Los Angeles.
Kathleen W. And somebody from Los Angeles?
Susan G., please.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Susan G. We have Kathleen W., Susan G. from L.A. Anybody else?
Cheryl A.D.
Cheryl A.D. Okay, you can tell us where you're from when you share. Who's after Cheryl?
Jordan L.
Jordan L. Okay. Anybody else?
Sherry Jo C.
is it Sherry?
Yes, Sherry Josie.
Sherry Josie?
Yes.
Josie. Okay, and you can talk. All right, that's a nice group. Kathleen W., it is your turn. Kathleen W., press 1, star 1. To unmute.
Good morning, family. Kathleen W. from Illinois. I love this paragraph, too. You know, my favorite line in here is, try to increase the pleasure of those there. And that is such a wonderful piece of wisdom that has helped me so much and changed my focus, changed my attitude when going out, you know, to a social gathering of some sort, thinking about rather than what I can or can't eat or being afraid of what might be there or, you know, like someone said, you know, obsessing about what my food is going to be. I think about, you know, take care of myself, you know, loving care of myself, what I need to go to the social event. I focus on, you know, the people there. Is there somebody there, God, that I can bless, you know? And I go with joy and anticipation of being useful and helpful, just, you know, whatever it is, and being myself, you know, just being myself. And as someone else also said in one of the shares, I don't go, you know, there's a dessert, there may be dessert tables and things like that. One thing I do not do, I do not go and check out the dessert table, you know, I don't check that out. There have been times when I've kind of, you know, got a glance of a passing glance of something and I think, oh, I wonder what that is. Oh, no, I don't want to know what that is. So I kind of have to make a covenant with my eyes what I'm going to look at. You know, I don't watch people eating desserts and long for them. Generally, I'm engaged in a conversation with somebody. And even somebody who's eating a dessert, I don't even think about what they're doing. I generally just engage with them. So that's a big, huge change in my life. What freedom I have, I thank God for it. Sugar is my main addiction, and it's just amazing that I can go to these places and it doesn't call me, but sometimes it does, you know, sometimes it does, but I have these helps that I have, and just ask God, help me not to think like that, but mostly I have neutrality around it, and I'm so grateful, but the main thing is that I can connect to people, you know, and not just connect to the food. And what a wonderful thing that is. And that is something my sponsor told me when I said, I just can't stop eating pizza. It's the way we connect in our family. We have kids together and we have pizza. And she said, you're going to find a better connection with your family. And guess what? I did. I had a new experience. So thank you so much. And I'll pass with that.
And thank you so much for your experiences, Kathleen W. from Illinois. We're going to go to Susan G. from Louisiana, LA.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for everyone who's being of service this morning. Sherry, thank you for being of service and getting us going this morning. And we have ceased fighting everything and everyone, for by this time, sanity will have returned. And here we are in these chapters to help us practice these principles in all our affairs, as everybody's talked about this morning, taking children back to college, going to parties, going to weddings, keeping their eyes on their own plate, as that was a saying that I always heard for decades. However, until I made that decision and came into these rooms and sat all the way down, all those half measures that I tried for 16 years, I'll chat with God here, always on a Sunday. It never, ever worked. And I would show up to these places resentful and annoyed that I couldn't have what they were having. And I made everybody else's life miserable around me. And once I started working these steps, fully conceding and knowing I would never ever grow those new legs, everything changed because the food was just a symptom. Just like Bill told us on page one, I was lonely and I drank again. I was restless, irritable, discontented, and all the world's players were not staying in their spots the way I had designated in my script. And today I don't have that. I go everywhere freely. And it gets better and better. And I've been doing this recovered for over 2 decades. And I can tell you now, I don't cause wreckage. I travel a lot. I go everywhere and I participate. And I don't care what anybody else is eating because I'm so honored and pleasured to be a part of, to be there, to be present, to actually hear what you're saying, not to look at what you're eating and why you aren't finishing your plate and how I will go into the kitchen and eat it out of the dustbin. I'll just end with this. I was home recently and I have a lot of siblings and I went with one of them to a sporting event that he participated in and there was a lovely catered lunch. And we don't really talk about what I do. It's been so long now. And I'd already surveyed because I knew if we were going to stay, but not a big deal. And he just walked over to me quietly and said, good to stay, good to go. And I just said, yes, I'd love to. And that was it. I didn't have to make a big palaver. I got to be there, support my brother. Even though he didn't rank very high, it was okay. I cheered. So anyway, thank you again for letting me share.
And thank you so much, Susan G. from L.A., your strengths and your hopes. And how about Cheryl A.D. now? It's your turn.
Hi, this is, did you call on Cheryl A.D.?
I did.
Thank you so much. This is Cheryl A.D. from Ventura, California. Mm. And thank you so much, Sherry, for your opening. It was really beautiful, inspiring to live life. And I just felt I have with my family. First, I'll say that I didn't used to have relationships with my family. It's just really a result of the changes that have come with working these steps, the way that they're outlined in this book, that has really transformed relationships in my life. And so the line in here that says, at a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. So my family knows, you know, that I don't eat certain things and I don't make a big deal about it. But sometimes they might want to go somewhere. And one time my brother wanted to go to a restaurant that he really likes. And I try to plan ahead, but sometimes that's not possible. So I ask questions. I ask questions about what the ingredients are. And I sometimes feel self-conscious, like I'm taking up too much time and I'm, you know. And, you know, my brother, who's not in any recovery or anything, he looked at me and he said, Cheryl, somebody else might be hearing what you're saying and they might need to hear that. It might help them. And I just was really amazed by what he had said. And it changed my perspective a little bit. And of course, I'm going to go and focus on them and focus on the people around me and not be obsessed with taking up, you know, selfishly taking up time. But I do need to take time to make sure that I'm not going to put anything in my body that will poison me. I was going to say something else, but my animals here are acting out a lot, so I'm getting distracted. And so my family, they even joke with me. You know, I sometimes bring my scale. Most of the time I have things measured, and this is just what I need to do for my program. And they'll even joke with me. My brothers will say, oh, hey, I need my scale. I have to weigh my banana. I hope this doesn't offend anyone, but we think it's pretty funny. And I'm just so blessed and grateful to have these loving relationships in my life and to have this recovery, and I pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Right on time. Cheryl from California, thank you for your experiences and suggestions. Okay. Let me just remind you, of course, we're only got about 10 more minutes or so, but we're on page 102, paragraph 1. why sit with such a long face? And we're doing one paragraph only. And Jordan L., it's your turn.
Hey, thank you for moderating for us this morning. my name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm very grateful to be abstinent and on a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous this morning. really appreciate all of the shares that we've heard. One of them kind of took me back to those last binges. I think that was how it was that I could concede to my innermost self that I was a compulsive overeater and that I needed to be here because I did not want to be here. But it was based on my own experience. It was based on the demoralizing experience of binging on foods that I didn't even like the taste of. My last binges were on saltine crackers and lime-flavored tortilla chips, which I find both of those disgusting. But I was in the midst of a disease, a physiological allergy that I don't have any willpower over. It's not a matter of willpower or mental capacity to get beyond that, you know, like it's a physiological allergy. and I think about that sometimes. Sometimes I think about it a lot. Like, why me? Why am I abstinent? Really? Because, like, I'm not even sure that I had that intention, you know? why am I here now getting to do this, you know? and I really don't even have an explanation for it. I'm not that good of a person. I really didn't even have like a great connection with God, even after like years in another 12-step program. You know, like I really don't have any good explanation that exists in like this physical world of ours or circumstantial world, right? Like really the only explanation I have is this higher power. And not even that like I'm chosen or God chose me or something like that. But just that, like, I was willing to surrender, you know? And now, after, like, years of surrendering the food over and over again, one day at a time, over and over and over again, right? Not only am I not withdrawing from life little by little anymore, but I like people want me around, you know? They like what I bring. That didn't even exist. Like I don't even remember that. Okay, I'll wrap up. I don't even remember that existing prior to me engaging with my eating disorder to begin with, you know? So, again, very grateful. Thanks for letting me share. That's all I got.
And thank you for sharing, Jordan L. And now we have Sherry Jo C., I believe.
Good morning. This is Sherry Jo C., recovered in Southern California. Thank you so much for the meeting. I love this paragraph, why sit with a glum face? I mean, that's really all I need to hear because when I first came into the program, I'm so grateful for my home group at the time, Detroit Sinai Hospital. And one of the things that we said in our opening was that our meeting was particularly for those whose disease had reached the critical level. And when I read this paragraph, it reminds me of the paragraph we read prior about having an alcoholic mind. Because if I sit there and I want to really be like those other people, I'm kidding myself. Most of those other people, if I'm at a wedding, they're going to go, they're going to have a piece of cake, they're going to dance, they're going to celebrate. The piece of cake is going to be one millionth of the experience of that wedding. And I never, ever wanted to be one of those people. My mom is one of those people. She has no food addictiveness whatsoever. I've gone to lots of weddings with my parents, with my family, for friends, family. My mom is the one who will eat a piece of wedding cake and, you know, she gets up to go talk to somebody and didn't even eat the whole thing. She avoids the frosting because it's so extra sweet. You know, as a compulsive eater, I mean, I never honestly wanted to be one of those people. You know, it's like we say, one's too many, a million's not enough. I mean, my disease reached the critical level. I wasn't just trying to lose 40 pounds. I was in the obsession. Like, I couldn't get myself out of it. And one of the things that I notice about myself over the years of recovery and that I've noticed about other compulsive eaters is that we want what we want when we want it. And when I was in the food, oh my God, I wanted so desperately to not be in the food anymore. But once I was abstinent, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to look at these other people and long for the days when I could eat something like that. I was never like those people. Ever since I can remember, even as a child, I had a sick, compulsive, addictive reaction to certain foods. And as far as telling other people, I just say, I have to follow a diet, special diet for health reasons. Like, that's all I say. I know it's not a diet, but it's a word that other people understand. And it's gotten a lot easier over the years. 30 years ago, when a lot of us came into recovery, there wasn't a lot of the awareness that there is now around, you know, whether it's gluten or what have you, other triggers, dairy, all this business, which is great. But, you know, I never once wanted to be like those other people. I wanted to obliterate myself and get lost, totally shut my mind down and be, you know, just face down in the food. So if I sit there and think that I want to be like these other folks that are, you know, able to control and enjoy their eating and get on with their lives, I'm kidding myself. Because that was never how I used to be, and I'm grateful to have that awareness and to no longer have an alcoholic mind. That tells me things that aren't true. I'll pass. Thanks so much.
And thank you, Sherry Jo C. from Southern California. Okay, we have about a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. Who would like to continue? But and then we'll be closing. Who would like to take the last?
Yeah. Oh, Richard, compulsive overeater.
Yeah, Richard, please, it's yours. Richard, what's your first initial?
First initial, R.
What's your last name?
Oh, yes.
R? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes, okay, Richard, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I dieted for 6 months before I joined the program. I've been in the program now for 1 year, and I've gone down 50, 60 pounds, and I reached my goal weight, and my thought very quickly was to just kind of like go about my own way, but I started gaining 2, 3, and then another 5 pounds, and I had to come back to the program within 2 weeks after, because I was just starting to lose it. I don't know why. I wasn't being very disciplined, or I'm not sure what it was, but I noticed that Zoom meetings and brick-and-mortar meetings really did the trick. It was like brought on some kind of a unseen spiritual blessing that I had earned. Not that you earn spiritual blessings, but it just seemed like I put the footwork in and retrained my brain to think, okay, now you're going to make a Zoom meeting. I'm trying to make this as simple as possible. Okay, now you're going to make a Zoom meeting or you're going to make a brick-and-mortar meeting. And, you know, my findings in research as per exactly what happened was that I found that immediately I started adhering to my food plan again. And after adhering to my food plan, I wasn't buying frivolous groceries or I wasn't, I understood once again that food, is one of my addictions is food. And then I wasn't getting carried away. It was machine food or anything else. And, I immediately got back on, cleared myself back into the program.
Okay,
and,
final reminder. Yeah.
Okay. And that was within a 2-week period. So If there is a graduation of the program, I can't see it. And basically, after a year of compulsive overeating retraining, you might say that I've recovered, and I'm at a low weight, and I'm at my goal for my weight as set by my doctor and the national guidelines for weight for height and stuff.
Friendly
like that.
Reminder, Richard. Okay.
But I reached the goal weight, and it's sweet. It's sweet to be trim and slim and trim, and it is so good. But I realize more brick and mortar meetings, more Zoom meetings. And thank you very much for letting me share.
Okay, Richard S., thank you for your share. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Okay, Vanita, would you please read 164? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. Go ahead, Jim.
This is Vanita C. from Anchorage, Alaska, compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.